Hey now, welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'll send you over to the guy that I do everything I do it for him. Right after I play his intro, Jason Rugard will tell you what the hell we're talking about in this episode.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us on this retro to Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. That great, great throwover from Trevor there. He may not be Maid Marian, but he's a lady altogether.
Hey,
you're a proud lady over there, sir. I've really had a good time going back and looking at this movie, our 23rd retro that we've done. I suggested this a while back, and you didn't bite. And then out of nowhere, you said, hey, let's go back and look at Robin Hood, and I was ecstatic. but to be fair, we went back and looked at the extended version, which has 12 minutes of extra footage not seen in the theatrical cut, which I am intimately familiar with, that original version. And I could spot
these VHS, new scenes. No less, correct?
No less. But you know what the interesting thing about this movie in doing some research, because, you know, we do our homework here on the show, believe it or not. we don't just wing this.
It's the only time we do our homework, yeah.
Exactly. I actually have a notepad, I swear to God. Anyways. Doing the research here, I found out that they shot this in 1/6/6, meant for the full frame, and that it actually was composed perfectly for the VHS, and that in these ultra widescreen editions that they kind of digitally pulled it. And I guess it's not the actual composition and aspect ratio that was intended. So when we saw it as kids, I always thought it kind of looked like shit on video.
I mean, 1/6/6 would be widescreen TV pretty much.
But it's not the full 2/3/5 using up that whole
correct
canvas.
But I mean,
there.
1/6/7 is 16:9 widescreen, so this is very close to 1/8/5 really. But that is interesting.
I don't remember any pan and scan situations.
The 1/3/3, yeah, but pan and scan would be 1/3/3, right? So it would be quite a bit different going from full screen or what was full screen back in the day to what is full screen nowadays. Would be quite a bit different going from 4:3 to 16:9. I would think still. But regardless, the movie has a fairly loose framing to it anyways. It never bothered me on VHS. And you're right. I never noticed any pan and scan issues with this.
No, unlike that Terminator T2 VHS that had multiple problems and issues in that.
This came out the same year. So, yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Same summer. So this was the movie of the summer until T2 came out in 1991 and took that title away. But this is a gargantuan hit. This made $360 million in today's money. If any summer film comes out with a star that isn't a superhero and makes nearly $400 million, that's unbelievable. It stayed in the top 10 for 16 weeks. Something that like Black Panther is doing now that we think is unbelievable and this never happens. No, it happened. It just happened back in 91 when no one was paying attention.
But isn't it insane that it happened with a Robin Hood movie? What Robin Hood movies make shit nowadays? They've come up with several. They have one coming out, right?
Right.
These do not do anything in the last decade. These have absolutely failed. And whereas this one was the number two movie globally.
Massive hit on a global scale. We'll talk about the pop culture reverence of this movie and what it did across the world later in the show. We talk about all the tie-ins that it had with merchandising and whatnot and the music, obviously. But getting back to what it did, the box office, it opened up with $25 million, which equates to about $55 million in today's money. And then what had like an 8-time multiplier, damn near, to get 7.5-time multiplier to get to 360. So this was a huge hit. Costner's coming off of Dances with Wolves, which is a massive hit. He's got all the Oscars riding for him. He just had won those earlier in the year. March there, the ceremonies. So now this is his next film. It's heavily promoted. Right. It is a smash. I remember the night before this came out, I loved that one. That came deep from the soul, brother. I felt that over here. I felt the shockwave over there.
Yeah, that's a Best Damn Root Beer. So that's where that's from.
I think Friar Tuck would be very sad with that.
Friar Tuck's my man.
So this came out, though, with a bunch of publicity. The night before this came out in theaters, Pierce Brosnan headlined a documentary, though, about the mythology of Robin Hood to kind of equate people that maybe weren't – this is pre-internet, so you couldn't just Google – Robin Hood, go on Wikipedia.
right.
That documentary is included on the Blu-ray and DVD editions of the extended version. I suggest everybody goes and watches that. It's pretty good documentary. But this was such a hit. Did you see this in the theater when you were a kid? Yeah.
I saw it in the theater. I mean, really, I don't remember it in the theater. What I remember is watching this on VHS just a million and a half times over. And of course, listening to the score on audio cassette. And I had the CD as well later on. That was it. You know, this was the movie. I mean, as much as Terminator 2 is the movie, this was the movie, you know.
It's so strange how those two movies are tied together. Because on my block where I grew up as a kid, you know, I'm a huge Stallone Schwarzenegger guy, but Kevin Costner is maybe my favorite, like, actor, you know, like, I put him up there with Tom Cruise, with a lot of guys that I like.
And he's just someone that you don't really think about, you know, but I agree with you. He is just, when he's on the screen, it's muted, but it's not so, it's kind of like Tom Cruise, really, you know, he's very muted in his performances, but it's just, he's just such a screen presence for some reason.
You almost think he's playing himself all the time. You know,
Of course he is. Everyone is.
But his run of movies was unparalleled during this court. You got JFK in here. You got all these movies that are.
I'm sorry. Did you hear an English accent when you watched this movie?
He tried one, apparently, then fired his dialect coach because it was going so badly.
Well, there aren't a lot of accents in this movie, really, in general. I mean, aside from people who actually have English accents. Normally, right?
Well, he's the American standout, obviously, in the movie, and he's very American in this. But
Morgan Freeman doesn't have much of an accent. I mean, obviously, you get an accent with Alan Rickman, but I mean, Christian Slater doesn't have an accent.
No, unless you're like a role player in this, like Little John or Friar Tuck or something like that. Like, you're not getting an accent. And those are the people that you wouldn't have seen. Like, I was wondering as I watched this movie, if they had filmed that script today, would it have done anything?
Oh,
would it
God, have been no, terrible? This is it, isn't this a terrible movie to begin with?
It's
tell
very,
me this isn't a god awful
it's clunky.
Script. It it's is clunky. A horrendous movie when you rewatch this. Yeah, I got to be honest. I mean, it is a clunky is a nice way of saying what this is. This thing is slow as shit in parts, and just there are major issues throughout this entire movie. I mean, not to mention just the merry band of thieves, right? Which are they just like gloss over really any emotional content that should be involved in this story? It's just glossed over, and people are just. Their friends, you know, the fun that's had in this movie is just kind of skin deep. You know, there's really no depth to this film whatsoever,
no,
especially in the love story. Like they just are in love, you know?
Well, all that kind of stuff. Like this happens. So then this happens. It's like they have to hit all the points on the Robin Hood scorecard of things we know and expect, even the splitting the arrow.
But you not know, something, I mean, honestly, we were very, fairly, very young when this came out. You know, I was 11 years old in 91. You were what, 12?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I was not obviously paying attention to the same things I pay attention to now when I go to watch a movie. So all that stuff that you kind of feel now when you rewatch this, you didn't feel back then. You know, you didn't care about it. You know, and obviously the opening to this with that score, and the title sequence, and then the cutting off of the hand and shit, and him being trapped there was just the most badass opening.
It was, you know what it is? It's a rousing adventure. You go, okay, this is going to be an adventure movie, like. Like Indiana Jones esque in a sense, where like
if only it was today, if only it held that up, right?
Well, I saw this four times in the movie theater that summer. I saw this more times. I saw T2 twice, and I saw this four times. And all my buddies on my block love T2, and believe me, I love Terminator 2. It's one of my all time favorite movies. But so was Robin Hood, and I actually that summer preferred Robin Hood over Terminator 2. As I've gotten older, I've realized that the coldness and when I thought there was nothing to latch onto besides special effects and visual beauty of T2 is actually way got a bigger heart and says a lot more than Robin Hood.
Yeah. I was going to say there's way more emotional content in Terminator 2 than there is in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
As an adult, you recognize that. But as a 12-year-old kid, all I saw, you know,
I agree with you. Yeah, as a kid watching this is the adventure movie. And I think a lot, the vast majority of that has to go to this Michael Kamen score, you know, which just is not only breathtaking, but is inspiring and is the type of score that even as a kid and now as an adult, when I hear it again, I just find myself even in my head or it's one of the scores that you pretend to conduct to, you know, it's just so grandiose and so beautiful. Yeah.
I feel like I'm escaping on a horse when I hear some of these things, you know, it's like, it's just like a major, something is going on, something epic and, but not overly like brassy and redundant, you know what I mean? Not like overbearing. It's right. Just, it's very noble.
And it's the no score wonder is very noble. The scores like this, we've talked about things like Last Samurai and other such scores that are very similar to this as of late that were used over and over and multiple times. And not only in trailers, but this score, of course, as we know, became the Morgan Creek score, whatever, yeah, soundbite. Yeah, theme. Yeah. It was also featured on the Disney DVD theme, which is interesting because this is clearly not a Disney movie. It's a Warner Brothers film. Everyone who listened to the score saw the potential here and used it over and over and over again.
And Michael Kamen, we talked about this off air a little bit. What a lost talent. He was and is
still so young in his 50s to have made some
iconic scores.
Amazing scores. You know, I mean, X-Men, Three Musketeers, Lethal Weapon, as you had said, Die Hard, but, you know, Mr. Holland's Opus. Who doesn't remember that, right?
Yeah,
you know, Iron Giant. Did so much just great things that you don't. I think the interesting thing about this to me is that I don't necessarily ever think about, I don't look back on these. I don't know. They don't retain my memory, I guess I would say, until I hear them again. And then it just brings me right back to that moment in time.
This is one of the earliest scores I ever owned. You said you had the tape. Oh, God, I had the cassette as well. I had the cassette so of much. This and oh. JFK, the John Williams score, which is fantastic. Strangely enough, that's a great John Williams score. It's a weird thing. I had two Kevin Costner scores tapes as a kid. I'm running around right. And listening to my
This is definitely in. Part of that John Williams moment, right, where scores can overshadow the films themselves, you know, and you get that a lot in this 80s and 90s time frame where just an opening sequence. We'll be reviewing Superman here, the 3-hour cut fairly soon here. But if you look back into the 80s with Superman, obviously that opening credit sequence and the opening credit sequence of this, it's nothing. It's the opening title sequence, but it sets everything for these films, you know, and it's that score that does it.
Yeah, it creates a mood and a theme, and which is consistent throughout the movie, as opposed to something they just slapped on that's forgettable. I mean, I defy most people to hum me the Avengers theme or things like that. I mean, there is one, but I you know, most people don't even hear it, and if they do, it's because they hear it a soundbite on like a Cheetos commercial. It's a tie-in, but regardless, I think this is the best movie of its kind, even though it's not great by any stretch of the imagination, until Gladiator. And which is strange to me because that Gladiator team then tried to do the Robin Hood movie that failed, even though it struggled to make $100 million at the box office, which was a hit, but still was so bad.
But compare and contrast this. I mean, this was something I also made note to bring up because you have a decade here between those two movies, right? Robin Hood and Gladiator.
No, two decades. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I thought you meant Robin Hood. A decade. Robin Hood. Yeah.
Right. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and Gladiator.
Correct. Yeah.
It's only a decade, right?
I thought you meant the Russell Crowe one, which was 2010.
No, right. Yeah. No, that one's worse. Yeah. But I am talking about the Russell Crowe, but Gladiator.
Gotcha. The good one. The good Russell Crowe movie.
Right. Exactly. But you look at the difference between these two, and I mean, going obviously from 2000 forward, right, which is modern cinema really to me, because 80s and 90s is very old school and very different in how they approach things. And even in that decade between these two, you have Gladiator is a million times better of a film. Just full, like all in on, like special effects, obviously, you know, story, everything except for score, you know, even though the score is fantastic. Although I really believe Hans Zimmer was the evil that destroyed our wonderful scores from the '80s and nineties. It's a magnitude of difference between these two, right? It's only a decade between them. And if you look at that Gladiator versus, as you say, Robin Hood from not too long ago, from them, there's not a huge difference between them. Even though that's a terrible film, there's not that same amount of difference between those two movies as there is between this filmmaking style between those. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I get what you're saying. This is such an antiquated way to shoot things. It's very loose. Even the color here is inconsistent, I felt, at times, in the darks and the hues. And it was underlit substantially at times, I feel. It was shakily edited. There's a lot of bad continuity in this movie. Did you notice that as well? Particularly with Azeem in the beginning when he says help me and his hands are one way, then they're behind his back. And I mean, it's kind of a mess of editing. The fact that they pulled
this
together.
Terminator 2 as well. I mean, that's something that it's from the 80s and 90s, right?
I just happened to notice it a lot more. I never noticed it when I was a kid here. It's the fact that Costner's got some of the worst hair extensions as well. I mean, my God, I'm like, why does his hair look so fucking weird?
You feel like he's almost going bald in this movie, right?
Because
it looks so
wet.
Weird. Yeah, because it's like, it's almost his hair is like levitating above his head somehow.
It's like some Nicolas Cage shit. It's really odd, man. Another thing I noticed was that during the prison escape sequence is that Morgan Freeman's in good shape, man. I was like, when the fuck did Morgan Freeman hit the gym?
Strange,
man. But did you also notice that a couple times there was really soft focus? When he's talking to Azeem, and Azeem's on the steps, and he's asking him, where that, he's talking about the tree that he owns, the mistletoe, that three lines that he has about talking to women in his country, he's soft in that. It's really weird that made that in, I thought. It happens a couple times.
Well, it's weird that you look in his crotch to notice he's soft, but all right, it's the 90s, I mean, continuity errors are, especially in early 90s stuff, are abundant, coming out of the 80s, which they were even worse. But yeah, I mean, soft and stuff like that. They didn't have, the video assists weren't as good. Anything that would let them know what they were shooting, right? Obviously at the time, to see what best the camera was actually capturing. They didn't have a lot of that stuff they have today. Well, today digitally you have everything, but.
I'm still stuck on the size of everyone's hair in this movie. It's like the 1980s hair metal version of Robin Hood. I mean, honestly, why is Alan Rickman's hair 4 feet away from his face?
I don't know. I think it's great. I think it looks people look rightfully dirty in this movie, even though they have makeup on and stuff. They still look dirty.
Yeah, I agree. She even tells him he stinks like a pig at one point. But this movie has the montage, which I respect because it keeps the 80s alive by bringing in the montage here.
This movie has the male butt, which we don't get very much anymore.
Was a butt double.
People
do we call the big hubba? I've never seen that as a kid on like Enquirer. Costner gets a butt double.
That's fine. Christ. But there was a time when, remember, male nudity was a thing. You know, it's not so much a thing anymore. As much as the boobies still, those exist, right? Those still carry
focus.
On.
There used to be a lot of focus on the female's chest. Now it's on their ass, and now
it's on the guys. Ass. Well, we still have the breasts. I think nowadays, even more. What we don't have at all, really nowadays, is male butt. You know, we don't have really hardly any male nudity at all. Where we used to have it quite a bit in the 80s and 90s. Right. Even look at huge action movies like this, or even a lot of Van Damme films and things.
The Weapon.
Yeah, the butt shot, the male nudity thing was a big deal back then, and it went away, really in the 2000s, which is, I think, odd. But that it's in this movie.
Did you forget about the Sean Connery cameo? I did.
I did, and I loved it when it happened.
I loved it too. I mean, was Sean Connery just grabbing paychecks? This is the same year he did Highlander 2. I mean, he did the little Indiana Jones thing. I mean, he did play Robin Hood at one point. I guess he was in The Untouchables with Costner, but he was definitely picking up a paycheck for like 2 minutes of screen time there.
I mean, I'm surprised he didn't have Excalibur with him, you know?
I forgot it was him until this, like, the wedding scene happened. Then I was like, "Oh my God, it's him!"
It's interesting. It doesn't really look like him until he speaks.
Yes, I agree. It's so. Now, do you prefer the extended or the regular cut? Because we watched the extended.
I don't find there's much of a difference. I don't believe there's any difference. Really?
I prefer the regular cut. I really do. I think
there's not much of a difference. I mean, there's more of the witch. There really isn't much. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I mean, overall, this movie is so poorly written and thus poorly edited. Really, scenes do not flow to begin with, whether it's the theatrical or this extended cut. That I don't think it makes a difference.
Did you remember thinking that when Will Scarlet was revealed as his brother, that was a huge thing? I mean, that was blown away by that.
That was enormous.
Yes,
it was. That was a big deal. I know.
I agree. I thought it was a huge thing. Costner was supposed to do that other Robin Hood movie that ended up premiering, going straight to TV on Fox with Patrick Bergen. I'm sorry, the guy from Sleeping with the Enemy. He started it. Really low budget, kind of gritty Robin Hood movie that premiered the same time but on TV. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't this. And that was a script that was being developed at the same time. This was the project that got off the ground. It's funny that there's no mention, though, of like the Errol Flynn stuff or really anything that came before with him. You know, that I love that movie. I'm a big Robin Hood fan. Or the Disney version. Maybe that's why Disney got the rights to use that theme on their DVDs, because they had some sort of rights on it.
I don't think so. I mean, Robin Hood's just an open thing. Anyone could do it. You know, they would have to have paid for that song. But, I mean, it's been said that there was a TV show, you know, that Robin of Sherwood that ran from 83 to 86 that everyone on this production said that they all watched. And there was, in fact, Azeem's character was named after, a character in that film. And they had to change the name and stuff for fear of copyright and stuff. So, I don't know. With these Robin Hood movies, you know, I mean, what's ultimately the difference? Probably not a lot, really.
Well, you know, we
they're
did
all
get a
so similar.
Do you recall the semi sequel we got?
Princess
no,
of
no,
Thieves?
No, we got
what?
We got Three Musketeers, which was basically the semi sequel because it had the Bryan Adams song attached to it. It had like the backing behind it. That was totally how they sold it. Was that it was basically like Robin Hood, and it was a hit. 2 summers later.
Well, there was that Princess of Thieves movie with Keira Knightley that was actually a Disney movie. I never saw it either, but that was 2001. So that would have been Gladiator time.
My goodness. Yeah, I didn't even know they made that movie. They just put me onto something there.
I don't think I put you onto anything. I don't think you're going to watch it unless you find the clamshell somewhere, I'm sure, at your local Rasputin's.
Yeah, exactly. Some sort of secondhand video shop. Speaking of videos, let's take a quick break and listen to the video trailer for the VHS release of this movie.
Bring home the magic, intrigue, and passion. Kevin Costner is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, at an affordable low price wherever video is sold.
And the affordable low price would be
$24.95.
The same. Can you imagine? The same price as a Blu-ray for a VHS, ladies and gentlemen.
And people bought those in mass. I bet that sold millions of copies. I had it too. That was a staple in people's house. That's the kind of thing where if you go to Rasputin's now or one of these secondhand video shops, they have a wall full of those old videotapes of that you can get per quarter. I mean, literally. It's very interesting, though.
I highly recommend watching it in the VHS format.
Yeah, although it's available right now on HBO Go, streaming on the HBO service, so are available on demand right there. So you can check it out this month on that. The unofficial regathering of these two, or the official regathering, but it was kind of an unofficial sequel to this because they said they would never do a follow-up to this movie. Kevin Reynolds, the director, and Kevin Costner reteamed for Waterworld, and we know how that turned out.
Clearly not. Yeah, clearly not a sequel to this.
I would actually say that Waterworld is better made in a lot of ways.
Are you kidding me? By a long shot.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't think the score is nearly as good, but as far as a movie, yeah, by like a huge long shot. But of course, you have a fairly good amount of time between these two.
And what's that? 4 or 5 years? No, it's
But compare early 90s movies to mid 90s movies. The difference between those two is quite a huge amount. You know, look at Jurassic Park compared to this. You know, look at anything that this is truly like early 90s, because this is a damn near an 80s movie, really. Even though it's 91, it's very like 80s. And when you get into mid 90s or even early mid 90s, you know, 93, 94, 95, anything like that, like the movies change quite a bit. Surprisingly.
which I think culminates in 96 when everything's a blockbuster that summer with Mission Impossible, Independence.
And by the time you get to 98, you're set to go. You know, I mean, especially when The Matrix hits and stuff, like at that point, like everything, like they figured everything out.
Yeah. And which stayed the same for a long time until this superhero resuscitation here. Let's talk a little bit then about all the – how popular this movie truly was because well, first of all, do you think it's dated? Do you think this movie is dated?
Well,
not only
yeah.
is it bad, but is
clearly
it dated?
It's dated.
I thought so.
By
yes,
a lot.
We got that.
I mean, especially just in the editing, you can see that. I mean, obviously, if we're going to talk about, you know, popularity, we got to talk about, you know, Men in Tights, right? So, Men in Tights. So let's be honest. Like, you know, Star Wars got a Mel Brooks movie made of it. Westerns got a whole Mel Brooks made of them. Old
Dracula.
Old. Yeah, I was just gonna say. Yeah, old horror got a Mel Brooks thing. And Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, got a Mel Brooks parody. Right.
That's how popular.
That's how big this was. Yeah. Just to put everyone in perspective, this obviously this wasn't the biggest Mel Brooks movie, clearly.
But it was his last hit.
Even though I love it, I think it's hysterical. Yeah, it was his last hit. But hit. I guess is. Yeah.
It made about 80 million in today's money.
It wasn't that big of. It wasn't a big enough hit to where he. It was damn near career ending in some weird way. I don't know why, but it was.
Well, not as career ending as Dracula Dead and Loving It, which was officially the
right.
That
was the real one. But it was close to being to the point where people were like, "All right, we're done with this." But it still got the, and his parody is clearly a parody of this film. You know, it's not just a parody of Robin Hood in general; it's this movie.
Well, I think the fact that Mel Brooks was a little late, even though he started the genre, he was kind of a little late to it with the Hot Shots and things like that. Mm-hmm. That it kind of got the cool factor, Naked Gun.
Yeah.
So he reimagined it with Robin Hood. It's a great movie. It's got Dave Chappelle. In
right. I mean, ever
role.
Since Airplane, they had kind of moved on to a little bit different type of comedy than Mel Brooks in the same.
He seemed
vein,
old
but,
hat.
Right.
I felt like at this time, even though I saw this
I
in theaters too. But and I think it holds up today. I think Richard Lewis is
Me
great
too.
In it.
I'm a huge fan of this. Yeah. Yeah. I know. I love the movie. It's not as good as the other Mel Brooks stuff, but it is still classic Mel Brooks. And so obviously this gets a parody, you know. Let's
there's
just be honest.
There's a novel tie-in as well. Let's not forget.
There's
a novel tie-in. Yes.
But let's talk about, I mean, parody-wise, typically when you, I don't know, when you parody something, kind of is it's a little bit poking fun of it and whatnot, and there's kind of a lot to be made fun of here because this movie was not well received by critics. Kevin Costner won the golden raspberry
yeah.
right for his performance here. Christian Slater damn near won his for this, and he was also nominated for Mobsters as well, which is a movie I think we both like.
I like both those movies.
Yeah.
yep
terrible film, but we still like it.
Yep.
So, I mean, do you agree, disagree? I mean, what's his name? You know, it's interesting that Alan Rickman was just loved, right?
Yeah.
And won a BAFTA, in fact, for this award, for this film. And yet, here you have the lead winning the raspberry.
Well, I mean, the BAFTA might have been a backhanded insult because they were upset that Costner was cast in this very English role. However, it was pretty much a fair play because Costner is not very good in this movie. He's kind of out of his element in a lot of ways. He's way too modern for this Robin Hood, if we're being honest.
I would agree, but is that because he didn't try for the English accent?
It's just because he plays it very modernly. I mean, he's too modern of an actor.
God's sake, I heard myself saying it. Could you imagine him with an English accent? It would be horrendous. It would be worse. It would be so bad. It would be unwatchable.
There's a reason certain actors don't do accents. I'm pretty sure. Tom Cruise tried one once in Far and Away, and it was very iffy. He's never gone back. I don't think that certain actors can get away with it. I think Costner's one. I think Cruise is another.
I agree.
They have a certain modernism about them that doesn't translate.
I hate to see this him playing this in the English accent. I think it just makes sense. And the interesting thing about this is every time I watch this, never once do I think, oh, he's not speaking the English accent, right? That should say a lot about him choosing not to speak an English accent, right?
Well, it's a choice, and it's a smart choice. Just like the fact that they didn't put him in tights. I mean, that was a great choice. Tight tights. let's talk about the toys here. Did you have any of the toys when you were a kid?
I did not, but I have a little something to play for you about the toys.
All right. What you got?
Battling evil with his mighty crossbow, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
We're under attack! The evil sheriff of Nottingham stole our weapon! Did I hear my name? It's Robin Hood and Will Scarlet! Dark Warrior, fire the bullet bomber! Look out! We still got another weapon, Sheriff! Fire the net launcher!
Ah!
The forest is safe again, for now.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Figures and accessories each sold separately.
So did you have the toys?
I still have them in a bin downstairs.
You do, son of a bitch. I think I had Will Scarlet. I did not have Robin Hood, unfortunately, because I remember the bow and arrow and shit. I had He-Man and Star Wars.
Yeah.
And not so much the Robin Hood stuff. I fairly certainly had Will Scarlet.
I have Azeem. I got Robin Hood. I got the Sheriff. And I have Will
Scarlet.
I lusted
after the Robin Hood one.
I have him.
Never
with his little
it.
Bow and his little cloth, like, outfit and shit. Yeah, I have
fairly,
him. And the cards,
like I said,
they still
I
have
Will Scarlet, but, the cards, yeah.
I have the back cards that they came on and the whole nine. I have those and some Jurassic Park figurines in a fucking bin downstairs that I've been carrying around for the last 35 years. But
they're worth nothing.
Yeah, they're worth nothing except for to tell you this right. On a podcast right now.
Yeah. Except to lord it over me that you had it. Yeah,
exactly. I had the VHS of this. I saw this movie so many times on VHS that when the DVD came out, I bought it because I was upgrading. And then I never opened it until we just did this did this episode. So I'm glad I finally got some use out of that. And there are some really great features on that. But the fact of the matter is this movie was a global hit. And the NES game that came out, you said you had a Game Boy version of it?
There was a game. I never played the Game Boy version. There was a Game Boy version as well, but there was an NES one that sucked. Let's be honest.
Yeah. It wasn't very. A lot of the tie-ins movies to Super Nintendo games sucked back then. Even the Batman ones weren't very good. Very rarely were they good, but it was a forgettable title. I don't recall playing it often. But I think that this movie stuck with people so long was because of that soundtrack. That Bryan Adams song was one of the biggest soundtrack songs of all time, up there with the Flashdance song.
Nominated for an Oscar, I believe.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it's almost like the Top Gun soundtrack, the Robin Hood song, right before Whitney Houston broke the next year with the Bodyguard song, which really propelled soundtracks back into something very valuable. They had kind of a lull there. And this was one that got people's attention because when you bought the soundtrack, it had that one song.
And as much that one song, are you kidding me? The fucking score is better than the. I'll be the one to say it. Score is better than the song.
Oh, well, the score uses a lot of that same melody. I think Cayman wrote the score, song, didn't he?
Oh, I have no idea. That would be interesting.
He wrote the music,
I don't know.
Did he? Yeah, because a lot of that score has the beats in it. That love theme. It's like their love theme. That opening piano riff. Yeah. Yeah, for sure it is. I would be ventured to say that that Cayman has some sort of rights in it.
I mean, it might be. Well, yeah. I mean, I think you're right, but I don't know if that's. I don't know which end that flows from, but I'm
looking it up right now.
Yeah,
it's written by Adams and Michael Cayman.
So it's written by both of them.
Yeah, which makes sense. So he
makes sense because he probably did the lyrics, and Cayman did the melody to some extent, I'm sure. Well, that's good to know because the score, this movie is 100% saved by the score. If the score of this film was bad, this movie is dog shit, as far as I'm concerned.
That song sold over 4 million copies. 4 million copies. And
Was one of those.
Cassette singles. I mean, that's huge.
Remember cassette singles? God.
My goodness.
I probably had this Bryan Adams one as a cassette single.
15 million copies worldwide. And you know where they loved it? Down Under.
Oh, why do I say that?
Because we've unearthed what is it, the preview, a TV preview of the movie, a TV spot with audience participation from Australia.
Kevin Costner is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, the film of the year, acclaimed by audiences as
absolutely fantastic,
brilliant,
excellent,
wonderful,
sensational,
fabulous film,
yeah. Really great,
really exciting,
really, really good,
better than Dances with Wolves.
Go and see it.
Action,
romance,
very good.
Oh, I really enjoyed
fantastic.
It.
Excellent.
Kevin Costner was fantastic.
It's gorgeous.
Excellent. Great film.
But I'd really come back to see it again.
Kevin Costner is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, the film of the year.
It's so fantastic. He's gorgeous, she says. Remember that? I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, remember when sexism used to run both ways? I lived in this time. This is why we don't give a shit about sexism, you know, at a certain age, right? Am I wrong?
Because everybody was a sex symbol in those
days. Of course they were. Like, they need to bring that back.
In the 90s, you were a sex symbol.
Need to bring that whole thing back, you know. I'm ready for that again. I'm ready for the male butt shots. I don't know. Why?
There was a time when Steven Seagal was considered a sex symbol. Let's just remember that.
Yeah, but, it was 300 pounds lighter.
My favorite part of that whole little preview that you just played is the dingo chaser who says that it's better than Dances with Wolves.
That is the best.
Better than Dances with Wolves. Too long.
It's like, oh,
I don't
boy.
Know about that, sir.
There was a little bit of coaching in that one.
I think they just got those people coming out of a free screening, and they caught them when they're a little
right. And this is a big deal. It's interesting they do this with Warner Brothers, but this was a huge thing for Disney to do. Remember this?
Buena Vista or Touchstone would do this all the time.
Yeah, commercials like this on TV, even in well into the 2000s, they played commercials like this.
Yeah, to get, you know, they would like a sneak preview of something. Like, you haven't, you know, audiences are saying that V.I. Wachowski's the fucking comedy this summer. And they would tank, and they get like four people to say it was the greatest movie ever. It's like going back and watching. This is a little off topic, but it's really fun. And go back and watch, if you ever get bored, YouTube videos of like the premiere night for Phantom Menace and the people in line and how stoked they are to see it, just knowing what awaits them on the other side. And then they do like the post interviews, and you can see some people being honest and some just be like, no, it was like, it was really good. And you're like, no, sir, you are fooling yourself.
Yeah. Dude, they want to. They need it to be that good.
Yeah, that's like because their life depends on it. But unfortunately, Robin Hood isn't that good going back and looking at it. But I still enjoyed that we did this because it basically is a nostalgia piece for me at this point in life.
Yeah, I mean, it is a time warp back to the 90s. You know, it really made me feel, you know, 11 again, you know.
Yeah.
And just, I remember watching this VHS. I remember going to friends' houses and then putting it on and just being like, yes, like everyone constantly watching this. And if not for the score, again, I think the score is the best part about this because it really resonates. It still gives you goose pimples. You know, it still really transports you back to what you loved about this when you first saw it.
100%. I think it's one of the most seminal scores of the decade, much like, you know, a lot of people hated that Celine Dion song from Titanic, but the second you hear that song, you think of that movie, the images from it. And when Everything I Do comes on, I hear and I see the images from Robin Hood, and that score especially, even though it was used as a theme song or a logo for Morgan Creek for all these years, I think of the pageantry and the epicness of what happens in Robin Hood. And I was just swept away by this movie as a kid. It's so silly now as an adult when you go back and watch it. I mean, this is basically like watching a Conan movie. It has no sort of believability or whatever.
Right. But I mean, clearly like the camera, like when he shoots the arrow into.
Right?
Oh, my God. God, was that not the coolest fucking thing in the world?
When it had the point of view shot of the tip of the arrow? Yeah,
yes.
Get out of here. I mean, that was groundbreaking special effects in 91. And then a month later, we saw T2 and nothing was ever the same. But we didn't know, you know. We didn't know what we didn't know. But I'm glad we looked at this, though, because these retros are fun to do. And shooting the shit here with you about having these toys and whatnot, I mean, it's just a blast. Hearing these commercials, I mean, just hearing that kids talk about the toys they had was like, I remember those commercials being played during cartoons and you know, wanting the thing that shot the net and the thing that catapulted, you know, Robin Hood over right. the wall and all this kind of stuff. And yeah. And I'm sure you could find this all now for pennies on the dollar on some sort of secondary sites, but still, it's not the same. It's just not. All right, guys, that's going to wrap up our episode 23 on the retro for everything. Or I'm sorry, for Robin Hood. We're going to leave you with Everything I Do, I Do For You, the Bryan Adams song. Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll be back with you next week with a retro for Superman.
Everything.